And there you go, starting us off this morning with Codaline and High Hopes. As I said, we went along to Parnell's last Wednesday and there was a meeting going on with LOV, and I mentioned LOV is a committee of local youths working to encourage learning about mental health. Excuse me. And the first speaker today that we're going to be playing now is a lady called Carol. And Carol is a behaviour scientist with a passionate interest in human dynamics and a fundamental belief in people. Carol assists individuals and organisations to achieve more of their potential through training, facilitation, leadership, development or coaching. So this is the first speaker, Carol, and a very, very interesting lady. So have a listen to this.
Interviews like this is absolutely brilliant. So I am thrilled to be here. I have 10 minutes, and what I want to do is share with you a condensed version, the highlights effectively, of a talk that I developed for an event last November when I was invited to speak in the theatre in Kilmallock in County Limerick. And when they rang me, I was thrilled. I know the theatre a little bit. I had been to something there. I know the manager in that I'd met her once, and she said, "We have this event. Would you like to speak?" I said, "Yes, please." And then she attached the lists of previous speakers, so I opened them. And I went, "Oh, wow." So I should explain. It's an event they run every year. They've had it for about 6 years. It's in November. It's every Wednesday in November. They have a speaker each evening sharing, like, uplifting insights and reflections for the year. So I open the attachment and I go, "Fintan O'Toole, he's cool. Sister Stan Kennedy, wow, I love her. Joseph O'Connor, published author. Christy Kennelly, published poet. Published author, journalist, broadcaster, poet. Billy Keen, GAA All-Star, published author. And me. Why the hell am I being asked? Who am I? I'm not good enough to go and do that. I'm not famous. I'm not a broadcaster. I haven't published anything. I'm not even a fully qualified psychologist. I just do stuff in the community. I'm just that voice in my head that says you're not good enough. I hope I'm right in saying I'm not the only person in the room who has that voice in their head. And I've certainly heard that voice on and off over the years, but I would never in my life, until last November and again today, have opened a talk by sharing that. What I would have done was pretend that I think I'm all that, and pretend that I'm fine and I'm perfect and it's all good. So why start there now? Why give you that insight? Because that's part of my message for this year, really, and I think it fits really beautifully with the Law of Initiative, is that when we do that, when we pretend we feel okay and we don't, we condemn ourselves and everybody else to more anxiety than necessary, because we're all doing it. We're all pretending we feel okay when we don't. So my invitation to you, the start of my afternoon today, is to be up for talking about the stuff that we find hard, the struggles, whether that's work, whether it's parenting, whether it's life in general. And we hear that message coming through mental health awareness campaigns, not just this one, but others on the radio, talking, encouraging people who struggle with their mental health to talk about it. I think the message needs to be broader, because that message says, those of you over here with mental health problems, you need to get better at talking about it and asking for help, because the rest of us over here with no mental health problems will listen. And that's bullshit. Ooh, technical term. We all struggle with anxiety, with fear, with low mood. We may not all be clinically depressed, thankfully, but it's like regular health. Nobody's healthy all the time. We all catch colds. Mental health is the same. So my invitation is to really talk about it. And the mantra for that, which made it into the title of this talk, is embrace the mess. And that title, I'll just very quickly tell this story. It came from a conversation I had almost 20 years ago, or slightly more, that really came back to me last year when I was in my 20s. I've just given that away, haven't I? In my 20s, having my own life crisis, and I literally left my job and ran away and went to visit a cousin who lived overseas, because she was the one person in the world I knew would love me and would listen to my stories. And she did indulge a long evening over a bottle of Baileys, sobbing and moaning about my relationship that had broken down and my friends that had betrayed me and the job that didn't give me the pay rise so I couldn't buy the house and how miserable and how sad I was. And eventually, through the snot and the tears, I'm a mess. And I stopped and waited for the support that I knew I would get from her. And she said the only thing I couldn't possibly have anticipated. She said, "Yes, you are. You're a mess. You're a great, big, beautiful mess. And that's okay." And it helped at the time, and then it went away, and it came back to me last year. So my new mantra is, we're all a mess. We're a great, big, beautiful mess, and that's okay. And at this point, almost halfway through my time, the organizers are now panicking. They're thinking, we put Carol up first because she's really positive. And her message is embrace the mess because we're all a mess. This is not what we planned. So let me tell you that once we embrace the mess and stop pretending everything's fine, then we also get to figure out what would help. And that's what I want to share next. I told you they were panicking and Hannah Lily's telling me in no uncertain terms. So I want to share a couple of top tips on how we can manage the stress in this life that we're now admitting is messy and not beautifully tidy. And I'm going to share those tips with you in the form of a song. They're also going to panic at this. And it's a song from musical theatre, which is not so common or popular anymore. So people may or may not be familiar with The King and I, which was one of the great Rodgers and Hammerstein classics. If any of the older people in the room know it, feel free to sing along. The song's called Whistle Happy Tune, and it goes like this. Whenever I feel afraid, I hold my head erect. I whistle a happy tune, and no one will suspect I'm afraid. While shivering in my shoes, I strike a careless pose. I whistle a happy tune, so no one ever knows I'm afraid. The result of this deception is very strange to tell. For when I fool the people I fear, I fool myself as well. I whistle a happy tune, and every single time, the happiness in the tune convinces me that I'm not afraid. Make believe you're brave, and the trick will take you far. You may be as brave as you make believe you are. You can be as brave as you make believe you are. You're very kind. I'm not a professional singer, and I sang that very deliberately because you're going to hear loads of amazing people this afternoon with amazing tips and ideas and inspiration, and you're going to go away on a buzz. And when your friends say to you tomorrow, did you go to that thing yesterday and how was it? You'll say, it was brilliant. And what do you remember? Oh, I don't know, because it'll all be a muddle in your head. But that song, that annoying, catchy tune, it's going to pop into your head like an earworm for the next 24 hours. And every time it does, your brain is going to remind you of the three important lessons that surprisingly are embedded in that apparently very simple song. So here they go. There's one about your body, one about your breath, and one about your brain. So the body message is, in the song, it's hold your head erect, strike a careless pose. Your granny will have said, take your elbows off the table and sit up straight. Turns out that old-fashioned wisdom is scientifically verifiable, and I don't have time to go into the science now, but let me guarantee for you that when you're feeling low, when you're tired, when you're stressed, if you simply move your body in a position that takes up more space, you will feel better. As you're sitting there now, the next time you feel yourself starting to breathe in, see what you can do to lift everything below the navel. As you breathe out, let your shoulder blades slide down your back. And the next time you breathe in, let the backs of your ears go to the ceiling. And for those of you who did that, I can already see the minute you do that, we open up the chest, we strengthen the lower back, and we elongate the neck. So shift your body, move, walk. If you don't know what to do, get up out of your seat. The second thing is the breath. And singing, as I just did, and I'm not suggesting, by the way, that you have to go find a stage to stand on and sing, but singing, humming, whistling, or even just sighing, which we do instinctively when we don't know what else, are all really good ways to exhale. Because you know when people are stressed out, we say to them, take a deep breath. What do kids do? What does anybody do when you say, take a deep breath? It's not very bloody relaxing. What we need to do when we're stressed out is actually to exhale. We tend to be holding. And it turns out at a very simple level, if you find yourself singing or humming or just sighing, as you're working, it creates space. It creates space for new energy to come in. So move your body, breathe. And the third one is the brain. The brain gets in the way. Biggest problem for us many times in our own lives is that we're getting in our own way. And I've got to tell you this in less than a minute. But the thing about whistling, how many people here, or just think about this, I won't ask you to show hands, but you know, you go to do something that you know really well. And it doesn't matter whether it's a physical skill, whether you're a footballer and you're taking a penalty kick, whether you're a golfer and you're taking a swing, whether it's a presentation about work, but it's something you know really well, you can do with your eyes closed. And just as you're going up, you have that thought of, what if I miss? What if it doesn't? What if? And when we get the what if thought, what happens? It goes pear-shaped. The thing we knew how to do blindfolded 5 minutes ago goes all horribly wrong because we got in our own way. That voice in our heads, that critical voice, needs to get shut down. And it turns out that actually whistling or humming a familiar tune prior to doing something that's really important, something that you know well, that you don't need to be thinking about in advance, is a really effective way, and they've done experiments to prove it, of getting out of our own way. Which brings me to the final point, and I'm 10 seconds over and somebody's going to be waving a flag at me. But I will finish on this, because it's in the title, mess, stress, and overwhelm. So life is a mess. We have some very simple tricks we can use to help manage the stress. Overwhelm is something I think, you know, maybe at the beginning of a new year, we're feeling a bit fresh and easy, but certainly in November when I spoke to the crowd, we're all feeling overwhelmed by life. People here, guessing by looking around the room, are juggling some combinations of study, sports, work, voluntary commitments, family, parenting, part-time work, all of that. And it's easy to get overwhelmed, and most of us can identify with that. But I'm going to suggest something to you, and then you can come find me at the break and argue with me if you disagree. I don't believe anymore that we're overwhelmed by all the things that we have to do in life. I believe that most of us are overwhelmed by how we think about the things we have to do in life. Most of us get overwhelmed, not when we're in the middle of doing three things at once. We get overwhelmed at night in our beds when we're panicking about everything that's coming the next week, and tomorrow's tomorrow, and I have to do this, and I have to do that, and I have to do this. So if I had more time, I would give you a lot more thought, but my one play with one is the have to word. We spend so much of our lives doing things we're telling ourselves we have to do. You don't have to do them. Do them because you want to do them. And if you can't figure out why you want to do them, don't do them and live with the consequences. But stop giving ourselves a hard time and telling ourselves how hard life is. And if you have somebody in your world and you go, I wish I was them because they're so calm. Calm isn't a personality type. Calm is a skill set. And it circles back to the same things I've already talked about. Calm people in a crisis do three things. The first one is they breathe. They're really annoying about it too. You know when you're having a panic and you go up to somebody and you say, oh, and this and this and this and this, and they go, yeah. And you're thinking, come on, say something. And they're going, let me think about that. They're breathing. Calm people breathe first. And then they get curious and they ask questions. So tell me a bit more about that. And so you think you're going to get fired. So who did you hear that from? Oh, the fellow over there. And does he know more? You know, and who, where did he hear it from? Oh, somebody over there. And where did they? So you keep asking questions. And the question in the back of my head always is, and you know, if you're going to be a calm person, you ask questions to figure out, do I have enough information to panic yet? Okay. If I don't have enough information, ask more questions. If I finally have established that, yes, indeed, the crisis you brought to me genuinely is a crisis, I now have enough information to know that it's a crisis, the final question I need to ask myself is, would it, you know, I have enough information to panic, would it help? And you're only allowed to panic when you're sure that it would help. And it never helps. So in summary, life is a mess. It's a mess. It's a great, big, beautiful mess. We can embrace it. We can be honest, or more honest at least, about the struggles we have and still be proactive in managing the stresses and reducing the overwhelm. It's a DIY job, and we have the toolkit. And I trust that this afternoon I'm going to get to learn some more tools from the speakers that follow. I hope you found that interesting. I hope you're going to enjoy the afternoon. And thank you again to the organisers for making this event happen and for allowing me the stage to open.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Thomas Crosby, and this is the lovely Aideen.
Oh, thank you.
On behalf of Sylvanus, we would like to thank the North Side Partnership for allowing us to speak at this exciting Progressive Law event. We are delighted to share with you information about our clubhouse, which has transformed not only our lives, but the lives of many of our members. During our presentation, we hope to give you a bit of background on Clubhouse and explain what it's all about. The key point that we want to get across today is people who experience mental health difficulties can do lead normal and productive lives in the communities.
Where did the idea of Clubhouse come from? Clubhouse originated in 1948 when patients from a New York psychiatric hospital began to meet informally. As more of them met, they decided they needed their own premises. This became the first clubhouse. Those early members decided that they wanted something different, so that was to what was available in the mental health services. Today there are over 300 clubhouses worldwide, 7 in Dublin and Kildare. So what's so new about the clubhouse model? Well, firstly, members were encouraged to take control of their own health and illness and not to leave it in the hands of experts. Secondly, they wanted their clubhouse to be somewhere where they were free of stigma and mental health labels. Thirdly, a clubhouse became a place where members could hope and could work towards recovery, making friends, getting work and further education. Clubhouse guarantees the four main rights: a guaranteed right to a place to come, a guaranteed right to meaningful work, a guaranteed right to meaningful relationships, a guaranteed right to a place to return.
So what's all about? We could talk about Clubhouse all day, so we're just going to cover some of the key points. It is designed to be a place where each member is seen as a unique individual who possesses valuable talents, strengths and abilities, which when combined with others in the clubhouse, assist in making the clubhouse come alive. Clubhouse is a non-medical model. This means that the focus is on wellness and not illness. Members are encouraged to concentrate on their recovery and wellness rather than illness. Members and staff share the responsibility for the successful running of the clubhouse. Working closely together each day, members and staff learn of each other's strengths, talents and abilities. They also develop real and lasting friendships. The role of staff in the clubhouse is not to educate or treat members. The staff are there to engage with members as colleagues in important work and also encourage and engage with people who might not yet believe in themselves. The daily activity of a clubhouse is structured around the structured system known as the work order day. This operates from Monday to Friday from 8:30 to 4:00. Members are encouraged to attend as often as possible and volunteer to participate as they feel ready and according to their individual interest. Empowerment through choice and understanding is a key concept in Clubhouse, and no one should be forced into something that they have not chosen to do.
A little about Souveness. We opened in May 2003 under the auspices of HSE and EVE. We have over 300 members from Coolock, Darndale, Kilbarrick, Artane, Colester, Baldoyle, Dunamead, Swords and the surrounding areas. We currently have 4 staff members with approximately 35 members attending each day. While in Souveness, you can work in our catering and admin department or the coffee shop or the maintenance unit, and you are invited to take part in our exciting social programme. Over the past year, we have supported many of our members to secure employment, to access education and housing opportunities. Membership is open to anyone over the age of 18 with a primary psychiatric diagnosis. We have developed strong links with community agencies and mental health services, which mean that our members can access opportunities quickly in a focused way depending on their individual needs.
I would like to share with everybody here today my personal experience with Souveness. I joined Souveness back in 2015. It has given me structure, confidence and self-esteem. After a long period out of work and education, I was very shy and my confidence was very low, but with time and encouragement and a lot of patience from staff and members, I have gradually rebuilt myself and feel a lot more confident in my social skills and abilities. I'm currently working in our head office and this has helped me greatly. I now hope to gain employment and do some further training. I am very thankful for the help from members and staff.
Okay. I would like to share with you my story of being a Souveness member. I became a member of Souveness Clubhouse in October 2014. When I entered the clubhouse, it was just like home away from home. The welcome I received was amazing. It was like I had always been there. The welcome, it enhanced my life, and I have a real sense of purpose for the future. It gave me back my self-esteem and confidence and a whole lot of new friends. It allowed me to brush up on my past skills and to learn new ones. I face every day now with confidence and look forward to the next day and getting involved in the clubhouse activities. There's always enough on the agenda to suit every member, so everyone is kept busy doing a task. I'm very happy to be a member of Souveness.
Peace from one of our members, Catherine Birmingham. From my experience, mental health issues were all new to me at the age of 45 years. I'm now 67. I didn't realise you could have mental health issues break down at any age, and it is okay. There are lots of help out there if you look for it. Do not be afraid to reach out for help. Sometimes the first person you talk to may not be the right person for you, so continue to look for the help that suits you. People are more open nowadays about mental health. I have a very good friend who did not have any mental health issues whatsoever, but she said to me, "I don't proclaim to know everything about mental health as I have never walked in your shoes, but I'm prepared to listen and help whatever way I can." That was a lifeline for me. I'm now 22 years on and never had a relapse as every week I continue to go to a support group, take medication and keep active. This keeps me well and there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. I also attend Sylvanus every day. I have made great friends. I'm never bored and life is good.
Would you like more information about Sylvanus? Yes. Okay. We offer tours on the clubhouse daily, 11 o'clock. If you go over to our stand at the end of today's presentations, we'll happily give you contact details, answer any questions you might have, and explain the process of becoming a clubhouse member. Thank you for listening.
Thanks very much.
And that was Thomas and Aideen there from Sylvanus talking last week in Parnells and talking about their own stories and their own life living with a mental illness. So Sylvanus is at the moment in Belcamp Village in Darndale there because they had a little bit of an accident last year with a leak, so they're over there for the time being, but they can still be contacted if you need to get in touch with them on 086 057 9105. That's 086 057 9105, or you can go on to www.eve.ie/clubhouses. So that's www.eve.ie/clubhouses. Okay, we're going to go over to our promos and when we come back we'll be going back to the Donaghy's Community School and they're going to be talking about 23 times even too many. So these are young people in school talking about their teacher about working on the issue of domestic violence.
Young Social Innovators, the aim of this organisation is to encourage young people to see the social issues in the community and figure out how to combat it.
The reason why we chose domestic violence as our social issue is because it is a rising issue in our society and has a huge impact on all aspects of a person's life, including their mental health. We feel that everyone knows what domestic violence is. We feel that everyone knows what domestic violence is, but they don't know what to do if it happens to them or someone they know. We also think that that Irish domestic violence services aren't funded well enough to cope with the issue.
Our class has completed many initiatives in raising awareness so far, and we have more planned for the future. Recently, we have also begun filming a short film that will be based on domestic violence and breaking its stereotypes. A few of our students have also composed a song called Back to Pain that will be performed later.
Last year we used the mannequin challenge as a way to raise awareness online, and instead of sticking to the status quo we decided to put our own unique spin on it. If you're interested you can find the video on the YSI Facebook page or on our school Facebook page.
In the near future we plan to place a mirror of self-worth in our students' bathrooms. The aim of this project is to get students to realise that domestic violence can happen to anyone by placing scars and bruises on the mirrors. We also put up contact numbers for domestic violence helplines on the scale. We've made a box of self-worth with positive quotes and have made domestic violence bracelets to raise and sell money.
We have raised a lot of awareness about domestic violence and plan to do more. However, while we are doing a lot to help, the fact remains that as you continue your day-to-day lives, 213,000 women and 88,000 men have been severely abused by a partner in Ireland. While there were nearly 5,000 unmet requests for accommodation from women in 2014, while nearly 2,500 children had to stay in a refuge centre because of domestic violence, my question to you is, are you going to leave here today and make a difference about Ireland's rising issue of domestic violence? Thank you all for your time, and I will now hand you over to one of my teammates who will take it from here.
Hi, I'm Aisha, and today I'm going to introduce you to a few people. So, as you can see, standing before us, we've got three couples. Let's get right into it and start off with Lisa and Zoe. The pair have been in a long-term, loving relationship ever since they met in college. However, they often get into arguments because Zoe's kind of controlling.
Are you really going to wear that today?
Sorry, I'll go change.
Okay. Let's move on to the next couple, Thomas and Sarah. They've been best friends since childhood and started dating ever since Sarah's 18th birthday. They've now been together for 2 years. Over the course of their relationship, Sarah has struggled with accepting Thomas's popularity amongst other girls. She suspects Thomas is cheating on her, and Thomas is fed up with the accusations. Despite all this, everyone knows that they love each other.
You're not wearing that. You're late again today, Thomas. Sorry, I'll make it up to you.
Okay, and finally, let's go to our last couple, Derek and Shauna. They met through work and have already been married for several years. They have a 3-year-old child called Taylor, who tends to behave badly and keeps them up at night. Because of this, both parents have been stressed out recently, and Derek sometimes takes his emotions out on Shauna. This often puts a strain on their relationship.
Can you look after her today?
I looked after her last time.
Okay, now that you've met the couples, we would like to ask you a question. Let's say Lisa and Zoe are couple A, Thomas and Sarah are couple B, and Derek and Shauna are couple C. Out of these couples, who do you think is in a domestic abusive relationship? Okay, so hands up for couple A. Okay, and hands up for couple B. And hands up for couple C. Okay, so I'll tell you exactly what's happening. If you said couple A, you guessed incorrectly. Although they argue a lot, the pair always talk about their differences. The fact that Zoe's controlling is only because she cares about Lisa and doesn't want her to get hurt. So that means it's either couple B or C that's in an abusive relationship. If you said couple C, you are also wrong. Even though there is a lot of strain on their relationship, most new parents face our problem anyway. The pair always try to talk out their problems, and parenting is a new experience for most couples, so sometimes there is strain in a relationship. That means that couple B are the ones in an abusive relationship. If you guessed that, good job. But did you guess that Thomas was the one being abused? Let's have another look at their relationship. Sarah's jealousy is what caused her to begin the abuse. In reality, Thomas isn't cheating on her. However, he doesn't have any way to actually prove that. Instead, he lets Sarah abuse him without telling anyone. Why? Because he loves her. All of their friends are right. Sarah and Thomas's relationship has their highs and their lows, but no one sees what's behind closed doors. The whole point of this mini performance was to show you how difficult it can be to spot an abusive relationship. Sometimes it's not just bruises or injuries, sometimes it's mental abuse. We also wanted to try break the stereotype that only men can be abusers and that LGBT couples can't have abusive relationships. Like, it's a mental thing. There's a stereotype behind it that, like, it's always a man beating a woman. But domestic violence isn't defined by gender. Thank you for listening today. If you know someone or you are someone who's been affected by domestic violence, don't be afraid to ask for help. You can come visit our table because we have leaflets and call lines if you'd like. And now I'm going to pass you over to two of our classmates who are going to sing a song that they wrote. Yeah.
I wonder if this is how my life will be. Scared of what he is gonna do to me. If anyone asks him, tell him I fail. I loved you, maybe still do, but you beat me and broke me. What can I do? Every time that she hurts me, I always come back. Back to her, back to pain. Nothing has changed, she's still the same. They loved you, maybe still do, but you beat them and broke them. What can they do? Stand up for yourself and your rights as a human being. You are strong, you are beautiful, and you are worth more than you believe.
And there you go. A big thank you to the students there of the Donaghy's Community School, Young Social Innovators. And they spoke about domestic violence. And if you want to find out any more or get in touch with them, you can go on to www.donaghyscommunityschool.com. And we're going to go over to a piece of music. And for the next couple of interviews, we'll be hearing from Volunteering for Your Wellbeing. It's a panel discussion with local volunteers hosted by Anna Gunning. Also, we'll have Dorothy Mayer from Near FM, from here, from the radio, from community radio, talking about positive mental health and well-being in the community. And we'll have the principal, Peter Keogh, from the Donaghy's Community School, and he is going to be talking about to undertake and accomplish, meaning that they encourage every student to achieve their full potential in every way possible. And then we'll have Shannon Whelan talking about her own story with mental health, and Owen Murray as well, talking about bipolar. And
but there's many, many ways to volunteer. So I would certainly encourage anybody who's looking to volunteer to look to their local volunteer centre. However, the most important thing is that we have a selection of people here this afternoon who volunteer in different capacities. And I'm going to kick off by asking them, first of all, to introduce themselves, say a little bit about where they volunteer. And I might ask them a few questions, but it would be great, we have a roving mic as well, it would be great if members of the audience here, or the group here today, could also maybe ask them questions. And I suppose the particular focus, as we've said already, is that connection between well-being and volunteering, and what's in it for the person who volunteers, as she volunteers to pick up my glasses. Thank you very much. So, where do we want to start? Do you want to introduce yourself, Esther? You have.
Good afternoon. My name is George Finglas. I'm Treasurer and PRO of Prizewitten District Men's Shed. Do you want me to say any more?
Yeah.
My background, I am a retired council official. I would have had responsibility going back as a rent collector, a rent arrears supervisor, an estate manager. I retired as really a contradiction in terms, a housing official in homeless services. So somebody had to do it, but anyway, I'm involved with Prizewitten District Men's Shed for the last, well, open 2.5 years, and I've been there from the start. But prior to that, I've been volunteering since the 80s. I'm involved with the credit union movement, industrial credit union, the job one, very much involved there. And just to say that, you know, where we are here, the likes of Parnell's, it's founded on volunteers. The children that get trained here, that's very much, and I often see them as unseen volunteers, the people that stand on the side of the sidelines and train teams, to me, they're my heroes. I'll leave it at that and talk to you later.
Hi, I'm Ali. I volunteer with the Young Community Leaders with Northside Partnership. I've been there since I was 15, 16. I'm 22 now, so I'm still there. And they're not getting rid of me. But I volunteer kind of everywhere, and the Young Community Leaders is like a course that teaches, that facilitates leadership and communication skills and organization skills and everything. And through that, then I went on to study event management as well, which I wouldn't have got to if I hadn't volunteered. And I did this, worked with the Spots versus Stripes as well in the 2012 London Olympics, which helped me to get to where I am.
Great. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Rachel, and I'm a fifth-year student in Donaghy's, with the principal right in front of me. Better say something good about the school. I sort of volunteer around doing activities around my school, but then I also do work in the Sybil Hill Nursing Home in Raheny. I've been volunteering there for about 2 years now, and the most rewarding thing is when the residents come up and say to me, thanks very much for coming in, but they don't realise it's them who helped me with like issues that have happened in my life, and I cannot actually thank them enough for that. So like, that's me done.
Hi, I'm Jamie, and I'm a former Young Community Leader, Young Community Innovator now. Outside of Northside Partnership, I volunteer with Fair 17, and I guess one of the most rewarding things from working with Fair 17 is that they have a great support network, and if it wasn't for some of the youth workers that work within that organisation now, I probably wouldn't be here talking to you today, because they helped me so much through my mental health stages and really got me back on track.
Okay, thanks a million. I'm going to wind back a little bit because we're starting to talk about the benefits and we've loads of things that we can ask about. But maybe one of the things that I'm kind of curious about, because if you look at the statistics, it is difficult to get young people involved in volunteering. And the highest age group for volunteering is probably the 25 to the 50, to the 50-year-old age group. And one of the challenges is to get more young people involved. So I'm curious about two things, just to tell me a little bit about how you got involved. Was it word of mouth? Was it because you're already involved in the community? Was it friends, whatever? And what was your motivation? So why did you decide that you wanted to do this? Can I throw that out to anybody?
Well, I'm a little over 50, but anyway. Since I retired, I retired at 58, so I found that there was a need, there was a want in me to do something. And really, I absolutely love my community. I believe that if you have people that love their community, that it'll rub off and people will get strength from it. How else are younger people going to learn other than to be taught by someone else that was down that road? I think it's important while you're in the workplace that your employer is paying you, you're learning through that, lots of training courses you go on. And I think to retire and just do nothing and stop is sort of a waste. It can be a waste to the individual, but it can also be a waste to your community. Some of the positive things that I found, even being involved in the Men's Shed, at the previous event in here through the Northside Partnership, Northside Voices, I spoke about one of the issues that is very strong to me about the Men's Shed, the need for to upskill older people in the likes of computerisation. I think a lot of us probably realise that we could be a cashless society in a few years' time. You know, you go into the banks, it's to tell you, like, go to the machine, put your money in there, you can lodge through machines. But yet there's a lot of people, and I see this very much in the Men's Shed, but by speaking at the last conference, the likes of Kieran McNulty from Costadoug, he contacted me and he set up a pilot project where the students are going to work one-on-one with the men. People say, what's that to do with volunteering? To me, it's an awful lot in the sense of now younger students are investing in their neighbour. So they're going to upskill somebody that maybe just to be able to turn on a smartphone, because this is the age we're going to. So, and that came about by being at a conference, something like this. I leave it at that and pass you back. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, George.
I suppose for me, I started with the Young Community Leaders, as I said, when I was 15, and there was an ad in the Northside People from Carol Conway, who was the first speaker, say, about this leadership course, and it was to teach all the different skills, like communication skills and leadership skills. And I was like, yeah, I'll definitely do that. Like, I'll apply for it and everything. And it was an absolutely amazing experience for me. And we've had 5 years of it, and it's been so good every year. But I think what's more important for younger people now is, although volunteering is great and giving back to the community and everything, that people want to know what's in it for them. So a course like this, say, where you're getting all these skills out of it, people want to build their skill base, and I think that's really important, is to be able to build your skill base. So that's what's in it for you. Like, so when you are volunteering, it's absolutely amazing, giving back to your community and everything like that, but this is what you're getting out of it. You are making the connections for the future, you're building your skill base, and you never know what's going to come by it. Like, yeah.
Absolutely, and you're stealing my input on some of the research, because that's exactly what it shows, that it's this two parts to it, that it's about capacity building, it's about gaining the knowledge, but getting the CV and getting the skills and experience. But actually, the motivations for a lot of people
is about meeting new people, getting involved and stuff, giving back to the community. But there's absolutely the two sides in terms of the benefits. So we'll come back to that in a little while. Rachel, do you want to?
I suppose the reason I started volunteering was because in the summer of 2014, just after I did my doing cert, I lost my granddad and no one in the family expected it. And I just went into complete meltdown. I'm not afraid to say I was just misbehaving. I wasn't getting on with my mum. I was getting into trouble, anything you can name. So my auntie suggested, because I was missing my granddad so much, that I'd go and volunteer at my local nursing home where she used to work. So I went down there, and it's at run by like nuns. So she introduced me to his sister, Catherine, and she said, my niece here would like to volunteer, and would you need help? And she says, of course we do. We're always looking for young people. And I've just been down there for 2 years, and I can tell you it's just so rewarding. And they don't, like I said before, it's them who help me. It's like, it's not like I help. I know I help them in a sense, but it's more them who help me.
Thank you.
The reason why I volunteer, I suppose, is because I have been involved with Sphere 17 since I was about 11. Yeah, Jesus, that many years. But when I turned 16, I decided that it was time to try give back to the youth service and try give back to the community. So I went on the young junior volunteer program. I've just kind of stuck around since. Just like a bad habit you can't get rid of.
Great. Thanks a million. I'm going to move on to look at some of the benefits in a second, but I wonder, does anybody want to ask anybody, any of the panel, about why they got involved or what was behind it, or did they find it difficult, any challenges? Yeah.
Is there an age, you know, limit, a minimum age that somebody can volunteer? Do you have to be 16? Do you have to be 17? Or?
Well, I suppose for me that kind of depends on the definition of volunteering. What we do, lots of young people help out in their communities without it being a formal contract with an organisation. And that's, you know, we would like to see a fairly broad definition of volunteering and a culture of volunteering. So certainly one of the things in the research from, I think in Canada, I was only reading recently about, you know, looking for an emphasis on kind of family-oriented volunteering, because actually the instance of volunteering is much higher where a person's parent or aunt, in your case perhaps, or other people have been there to kind of as showing them the way in terms of volunteering and setting that example. So there wouldn't be a lower limit. Obviously for us in the volunteer centres, there's all sorts of issues about matching people up and child protection. So for transition year students, for example, here we go again, leave them. For transition year students, there would obviously be child protection issues, and if you're registering with our database online, there's child protection issues and you need to get your parental consent and your guards clearance. But I think there's lots of ways that people can volunteer. I mean, look around your own neighbourhood. People walk dogs. People, to me, that's about being involved in your community and volunteering. And I think it was George was saying earlier, just while we were talking about community, like one of the biggest indicators, I suppose, for volunteering is where a community has a positive, where the participants in a community have a positive sense of community, that the levels of volunteering are much higher. So where there are active groups like Northside Partnership, where you can get a turnout like this at this type of an event, that's the kind of culture that really promotes volunteering and promotes it in a very inclusive way, not just one individual who wants to sign up, but a sense of community that goes throughout the age groups as well, I think. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else in terms of that sign-up piece, getting involved for our panellists? Okay, maybe just to look at some of the benefits, I'm just going to ask you just, you know, what are the, looking back at the focus of today, at the focus on mental health, what are the kind of big takeaways that you get from being involved in volunteering? So for yourself, for your own well-being, and be that mental health or physical health, what are the kind of things that you've taken away from your experience?
Well, I guess you elaborate. Like you touched on it a bit earlier on, how, you know, volunteering and mental health kind of, like, adds up. For me, it kind of gave me the support network I needed when I was going through bad times in my life. You know, I gave a lot to Sphere 17 when I was volunteering with them. they gave me everything in return when I needed it. Mm. You know, they were the support network I needed to help me through them bad stages. So I guess the benefit was I didn't only volunteer with colleagues. I guess I found out after that time that I actually had a lot of friends that worked within Sphere 17 that, you know, still work for Sphere 17. They weren't colleagues to me. I looked at them as if they were close friends that helped me through that path. Like, so, yeah, but the benefit also would be, you know, I get to deal with kids and, you know, teach different things. Like, the peer education program has given me a great opportunity to learn younger people about numerous different subjects. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just every day, you know, new opportunities could arise from it. Mm. But I'd say the biggest thing was, like, finding out that a lot of the people that I considered were colleagues turned out to be really good friends.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I suppose there's the practical skills that you learned, but there's also, obviously, you've got a sense of leadership and working with younger people, self-confidence, those kind of issues as well, I suspect, from your involvement in it.
Yeah, like, it gave me a lot of skills. So I kind of had some leadership initiatives before I went to the Young Community Leadership Programme, because at that point I was already, you know, in with groups and stuff like that that were in and out of the centre. But yeah, like, through volunteering with Sphere 17 gave me a lot of life skills that, you know, that will be with me for life and that I'll never forget, you know.
Great. Thanks a million, Jimmy. Rachel, do you want to?
I just suppose my benefit would be it helped me get over the death of my granddad, and then something happened to me last summer, and I went to self-destruct. I didn't even want to be on the earth anymore. Like, I'm not afraid to admit that. So that helped me go down to the hill, helped me cope with that as well, because they just, rather than saying thank you, I just put a smile on my face for a strange reason. I just put a smile on my face. Mm. So that's really it. They saved my life.
Mm. So sometimes it makes you look outside of what's going on for yourself, I suppose, and just the fact that you're not just helping somebody else, but that it's a distraction and that it's you're of value. I suppose it gives you a sense of value.
Yeah, definitely, because I go down there two or three times a week, and every single time I'm down there, one of the sisters or one of the residents are coming up and giving me a hug and saying thank you so much. Like, you don't realise how much it benefits them. And I'm like, it's really me that's helping you. Like, it's me, really you that's helping me. Yeah. So, like, I don't know why, I couldn't understand why they're thanking me. But then I realised,
it works both ways. It works both ways, absolutely. Thank you, Rachel. Annie.
I suppose for myself, like, there are way too many benefits to mention. With the Young Community Leaders Programme, there's a part of it for STEPS, and STEPS helps you with goal setting and thinking positively and things like that, and putting positive thoughts into your mind and putting that positive thoughts out. So I suppose that really helped me in the sense that, like, negative self-talk is a big, big thing for me, and dealing with that. And that happens with everybody, so I think with volunteering then, keep going. So that was part of the course, and then bringing it on to with me and anything I'm doing, especially even with my course, we have to do, in our first year, we did 200 hours of work experience, and that was all on a volunteer basis. Like, you wouldn't get paid for that. And it's about, so that was the incentive, but the benefit to get out of that is making the contacts and helping yourself to be more positive and everything like that. It just works. Like, there's just so much that I've done since then that I don't realise. And then even part of the committee that put this together, it's when you see the outcome sometimes, like, it makes it all worthwhile, like, all the stress and everything. And
and sometimes you don't even notice those benefits as you're going along. I think it's when you reflect back on what you've learned.
Definitely. Yeah.
Great, thanks, Eddie.
The word in Dauphins was alluded to earlier, I think, by the lady from Dublin City Council. Very much, I believe that being involved and to see people prosper or flourish in the sense that maybe have been in a dark place, and from Men Shed's point of view, I see this on a weekly basis when we have the lads in. People who at one stage may have been in a place where they had difficulty communicating at all, to having a crack, telling jokes, playing cards, putting the name down for a game of pool, slowly, but it rubs off. I mean, on a personal basis, and listen to the team, the mental health, like, my one of my heroes is Brezzy, for obvious reasons, for somebody that's in the limelight that can come out and talk about mental health. And I don't believe there's a family anywhere, probably in the world, whether you're Trump or Murphy, that's not affected by mental health. I think it hits us all, because once we have a beating heart and a mind, the sun comes up and goes down, and I think people, happy and sad, it's a natural phenomenon. But on a personal basis, I suffered with SADS probably for the last 25 years, and I joined Weight Watchers last January. Lost 4 stone. You'd be delighted to say, what was he like before that? But anyway, I lost 4 stone, but by doing that, I had to get out walking. And by doing that, for the whole of last year, started in January, no SADS, didn't suffer. This year, it's gone, because I'm exercising, and it's the natural endorphins being released that has sort of... So there's so much that I'm after hearing the previous speakers that I can identify on a personal basis with regards of mental health. And again, I'm very proud to be part of the Men's Shed that can give these positive feelings back. So that's what I get out of it.
Great. Thanks, George. Thanks, everybody. I suppose just to back that up with a little bit of research, you know, a piece of research that was done in 2001 around the connection between volunteer work and the community, and they looked at 6 particular aspects of well-being. And those 6 aspects were happiness, life satisfaction, self-esteem, sense of control over life, physical health, and depression. And the results of that study clearly indicates that volunteering enhances all 6 aspects of subjective well-being, and people report greater well-being, and the people who report greater well-being tend to invest back more into volunteering. So it kind of builds on itself. But those 6 indicators are all substantially increased in people who volunteer, so there's a clear connection there. I wonder, does anybody want to share their own story of volunteering, our own experiences, positive, negative? Who could add to what our panelists have said, or anybody want to ask any further questions on the well-being part, particularly benefits? Yeah.
I've worked with Volunteer Ireland before as a photographer. I went down to Limerick and took photographs of someone who, I don't remember his name, but he was an old man, and he was in this kind of building or an organisation or a community program. Anyway, I've volunteered with you guys, and I'd like to volunteer again.
Great. Super. Sign up. Excellent. Anybody else? Yeah, go for it.
How's it going? I've been volunteering since I was 18 years of age. I started with regular blood donations, and then I joined the Red Cross. Oh. I just wanted to know, is there like a limit to what you can volunteer with? Because like, I've been volunteering, as I said, since I was 18, and I did sort of feel a bit overwhelmed. Like, so would there be like a limit to yourself where you just have to say no?
I think that's certainly worth... I'll say a little bit about Volunteer Ireland and good volunteer management practice, but maybe is there a time for any of you where it's actually felt like too much?
So I guess it's just for yourself to kind of know how much you can handle. You know, again, when I go back to like the whole goal setting and, you know, positive like thinking and things like that, once you can kind of keep that, keep going, but you don't want to overburden yourself either with loads of stuff. You want to make sure you're able to cope. So it's just kind of like on a personal basis, like, you know, it's not really, I don't think it's a group thing, like, oh, you can only do this amount of hours, but it's kind of just as much as you can deal with.
Yeah, on that I would say think of work-life balance too, in the sense of what you're taking on. You can be a busy fool and be labelled because you're good at it, whether you know computers or you know this, that and the other, that you're popular, you get all the work. That can be, make a good volunteer turn into a bad one, in the sense that distracted from family events. I think you have to be able to look at your calendar and see that you can put the time in, but also you can shut off and say, I did my best, and I'm happy enough, and set clear lines. It's important because, again, like I say, if you do too much, you can, you know, do it for the love of it as opposed to turning it into a chore. You should really like what you're doing and feel happy that when you go home that you've made a difference, and very much to encourage people within your own community. You know, like I'm saying, I have 9 grandchildren. The reason I volunteer is I want all districts, not only Coolock, to be a better place for them to grow up in. So I think that if we start thinking that way, that's infection, that goes around, that's good behaviour, that's, teach them right. The older should teach. What I love about the men's shed, sitting with an 85-year-old retired firefighter, I absolutely love it. I'd much prefer getting a debate going, because they'll educate you. They'll tell you what was like where my people came from, the North Strand and the bombing. This fellow was worked on it. He had to put the bloody things out. So this is what the first-hand knowledge that I'm learning. That's what I'm saying about. That's the nice part of it. But don't overburden yourself. If you feel that you're under pressure and you're getting that you're not happy going into it, it's time to step back a bit.
Do either of you want to add to that? Can you overdo it? Are you happy enough?
I was actually told just recently yesterday by the group I was organised to say no, because last year I was doing a lot. I was doing a YSI project in school. I was helping out with the fourth years. I was doing Gashka, and then to top it all off, I was doing all my homework as well. So I literally have to learn to say the word no, because I was doing everything and it took its toll on me. So yes. Everyone needs to learn to say no.
Absolutely, yeah, and know your limits. And I think that is one of the messages that we would be giving to organisations that involve volunteers. I was going to say that use volunteers, but not allowed to say that, but engage with volunteers. Is very much around, you know, working with volunteers is the same as working with staff, that we really have to know and review why people are in it, what kind of a job they're doing, give them supervision, give them feedback, give them support, and when it looks like it's too much, to help them to back off a bit as well and to take a break. And that's a huge part of the Volunteer Ireland brief and the Volunteer Centres brief, is actually to look at what's good volunteer management. Before, we used to just grab any volunteers that were happy to do the hours and we'd rope them in and get them to fill in all the gaps. But actually, there's a huge amount of work, and we have an award within our national awards for the best or recognised volunteer manager, which is really about good practice in understanding why people volunteer, supporting them, and helping them to do something, I suppose, that balances with their own life and their own circumstances. Yeah. Anybody else? Any questions or comments or observations? One more there.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I have to go now, so I'm going to ask a question and leave on a good note. Rachel, how do you think we can get more young people involved in volunteering?
I think we need to get into schools, youth clubs, like everywhere, because like Andrew here, he volunteers with me down in Silver Hill as well. So I think we just got involved, like I got involved through my aunt, and I think Andrew got involved through school. So, yeah, I think skills are a definite way to get through to young people.
Lovely. Talk to Larry.
Thank you. That was going to be my last question, actually. And I'm just wondering, you know, I agree, we should go to schools, we should go to youth clubs, but if you had the kind of the 2-minute elevator pitch, the kind of this is how we're going to sell it to young people, like in summary, how would you sell get involved in volunteering, because anybody want to?
Yeah, sorry, there is an onus, I think, on the government to provide. It's okay saying volunteers, to provide the wherewithal and the likes of premises and facilities. Like, our men's shed, only for the likes of Superior 17, who allow us to use their building for 2 hours a week, we wouldn't be able to accommodate those 36 men that live in that community to get great enjoyment. We'd have absolutely nowhere.
So, you know, we go to network meetings organised by the Northside Partnership, and I sat around the table there a month ago with six other groups, chess clubs, photography clubs, other men's shed, and every single one of them had the same issue: premises, 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 and the pressure to put them under as volunteers. One guy was saying, well, look, we have to charge £5 a week. Well, like, we charge €2 a week, but they don't have to pay if they haven't got it. And the reason I'm saying that is €2 in to certain people can mean a lot. They mightn't have it. Some people might be able to afford a fiver, others don't. So in other words, when the issue is, when the services are not being provided, you know, I would see it that the common denominator is for areas such as North Central. You're talking about a lot of funding. You're talking about volunteers, by and large, that if there was a premises big enough, purposely built, to meet all the needs, because remember, we all come, it's only a small, like Dublin's a village as such, so North Central could have somewhere provided through a lot of funds or something like that, and I'm very much, Ed, and I'm saying this, that maybe that message could be given back to government, that it's very important that, you know, the need is there, we have the best of volunteers, people to educate the younger people going forward, but premises is huge. We just haven't got it. You know, we can only provide our service 2 hours in the morning. What about the men that mind our grandchildren? I'd love to be able to open our service in the afternoon. Nowhere for them. So the ones who mind our grandkids have nowhere to go. They have to stay looking into the corner. That's what I'm saying anyway.
Okay. Thanks, George. Okay, I know we're conscious that we have to kind of wrap up. So I'm just wondering if we can ask you in a one word, what's your biggest takeaway from volunteering? What's your biggest... what I get out of it. Finish the sentence.
Accomplishment.
Which?
Accomplishment.
Accomplishment. Brilliant. Thank you.
Confidence.
Yeah, great.
Friends.
Friends.
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction. That pretty much tallies with the research as well. Excellent. Great. I'd like to thank you all. Fantastic.
And there you go, that was the first half of the seminar that took place in Parnell's last week. We heard from Carol Conway, who is a freelance catalyst. We heard from Thomas Crosby and Aideen Birkendlike from Souveness Clubhouse. Also from the students of Donaghy's Community School with 23 times is too many. And there, the last ones was Volunteering for Your Wellbeing, a panel discussion with Anna Gunning and all the volunteers from the area. We'll play the second part of this seminar next week.